You're not supposed to cry before the talk. I just have to share that, I listened to that song so many times when I was struggling, when I suffered loss in my life. And, we didn't even talk before this today. And just, we're here, guys. Thank you so much for that. That was, it was perfect. Yeah, you said it. It was perfect. Thank you all. We're so blessed to have you. Every week, week out, it's just such a blessing. You bring your energy and your talents and your treasure here. Thank you.
Amen. Yeah.
Good morning. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for those who are watching at home. It's been a minute since I've been up here. It feels good to be back. It feels good to be with you all. So thank you for being here with me today. First weekend of Lent. First week of Lent. How's it going? Any of y'all break yet? I didn't give anything up because so often I feel like giving up. It's a joke. All right, thank you. I'll work with my guy. We'll rewrite that. No, seriously, you don't always have to give things up. It's not about subtraction all the time. It's about addition. Maybe you're taking more time to focus on your health. You're being more mindful. You're spending time with your family, your loved ones. It's wherever you are, know that you're on the perfect path. It's, you're right where you need to be, right here, right now. For everything, there is a season. And for every matter under heaven, there is a time. It's a time to be born and a time to die. And just when the caterpillar thought his world was ending, he turned into a butterfly. This is a talk for the kids today. Maybe not, because this morning when we were eating breakfast, my 8-year-old asked if he could come sit and listen to the talk. And I was like, no. No, because I know him. I love him. He's my heart. He's my soul. But if he was in here after 5-6 minutes, he'd start getting fidgety. He might bring a lot of attention to himself, and I didn't want to deal with that today, so I was like, no, we'll have a trial run when I'm not talking, and then maybe you can come and listen. And it was a joke, it's for the kids, but it really is. It's for the inner child that's in all of us. The inner child that's 6, 7, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, whatever, that little boy or girl or person that's inside of you that we feel like we've outgrown, but we haven't. Still with us. Most of us are adults here. We're in physical forms. We might have some more wrinkles than we did back then. But that child is so prevalent in our lives. It hates endings. It's tumultuous. It wants what it wants. It's impetuous. It wants what it wants right now, and it gets scared. It doesn't have the inner authority or the wisdom to ask for what it needs, and so it throws a tantrum. And a lot of times when it does that, when these things rise up in us, we just want to grab it and put a stranglehold on it and shove it down. When the truth is, we need to sit there and we need to listen and give it a hug and hold its hand and walk with it. We act like it's not there, but I know it is. I mean, my inner child freaks out every time my wife tries to change the living room design. And she does it quite often. That's her thing. She loves to go to Round Top. She loves to go thrifting. Whatever she wants to do, throw a new rug in, spice the room up. Puts a lot of time and effort. She's got a great eye. But I'll come in, and I'll see the rooms change, and I'll freak out. I'm like, what have you done? It's the death of all good things for me. And looking at it objectively, it's not me. It's not 40-year-old Michael. It's the young child, because I don't want to get all Freudian on you guys, but it's my samskara, it's my inner pathways that we all have, that a lot of those were forged when we were young and formative, and that dictates how we interact with the reality, with the present moment. And so backstory on me is, little Finn grew up in the same house from age 2 to 18. There wasn't much change. My mom left things as it was. She didn't have the eye quite like you do. I love that about you. My wife, she had lived in many different houses, many different countries even, before she left home at age 17. And so you can see that our backstory, our histories, are vastly different. And so we interact with the world differently. It's nothing against her. I love it. And it's nothing against me. It's about realizing what's going on inside of us. And that will help us interact with the world. We won't push away the present moment. We might embrace it. We might have some separation and space from it to find the beauty of what's unfolding before us. And in unity, you know, we judge the mind, our thoughts create our outer reality. We know it. We believe that. And that's true. So why isn't it as easy as just change your thoughts, change your life? You know, that's what they say, right? But it's not so simple. It's more than your thoughts. It's your beliefs. Because scientists, endocrinologists, people that study this thing for a living, they estimate that the average human has around 30 to 60 thoughts a day, roughly, give or take. And about 85% of those thoughts are the exact same. And oftentimes, those thoughts aren't the best thoughts. We have this evolutionary disadvantage we have. We tend to focus on fearful things. Maybe something someone said we didn't like, or that thing that happened to us way back when, but we're still really afraid of because we haven't processed it. We haven't let it go through us. And so we have all these thoughts which are, on their own, they're non-empirical, ethereal waves of energy. You can't touch it, you can't really see them, but we know they're there because we feel them. They're as real as anything else. And so you start having the same thought over and over again, the same fears, it becomes more than that. We solidify it, and it becomes this object that can be in our way and block us from our highest good. It's not the thing that is bothering us. It's what we think about the thing. And I was thinking about that when I was writing this talk, and I remember when I was younger, I was deathly afraid of Freddy Krueger. One, two, he's coming for you. Three, four, lock the door. You know, this is really is a talk for the kids, kids of the 70s and the 80s. I mean, how many of you guys remember Freddy Krueger? Thank you. And when I was younger, I had this strong belief in Freddy. And I could not go to sleep without doing this whole process of launching myself over my bed. I'd get like 3 or 4 feet away from the bed, and I just jump onto the bed because I was afraid that he'd reach out from under my bed with that nasty little glove he had with those knife hands, slash my ankles. And I did this for a good year or two. But the thing is, yeah, I had a strong belief and faith in Freddy. But the thing is, he didn't go anywhere. He's still here. I'm conjuring up him up right now. I can go home and watch him on some streaming service. He didn't go anywhere. He's still in the zeitgeist of our society and our times. But what I believe and think about him has changed. I can talk about him right now. It does nothing, absolutely zero, to my energy field. It doesn't disturb me. And Freddy Krueger is kind of low-hanging fruit, right? It's a fictional character that's been made up. But what happens when someone we love, someone we have a complex, maybe tumultuous, yet loving relationship with, leaves this plane and dies? What happens if something happened to us that was traumatic and we can't get it out of our mind and our bodies? It becomes solidified and affects everything we do. What happens then? I can't impress you guys that it's all about our mind and what we think about these things. You know, I don't push Freddy Krueger away anymore because I don't have energy on him. I know he can't hurt me. I accept this thought and this belief fully. Everything in mind is this. And Eric Butterworth clarifies this point fully in one of his dissertations. He says, "So the key is not just believing in God, but believing from the consciousness of God. A believing attitude based in the awareness that you live in God. You live in this wholeness of the universe." The psalmist gives us direction when he says, "Be still and know that I am God. I am one." And then move forward in that believing consciousness. There's a point here that needs to be clarified. Faith is a factor of the natural man, as natural as seeing or hearing or tasting. Having someone say that their problem is lack of faith, there really is no such thing as a lack of faith. Faith is as natural to us as breathing. So the proper question is, what are you believing in? Fury is faith. Worry is faith. Insecurity is faith. They're just believing in the wrong things. So faith is not something that you find somewhere. You don't get faith by going to church. You don't get faith by studying pages in a book. You don't receive faith like some diploma at the end of a course of study. Faith is a free gift of God, which all persons have, but few use rightly. And like I said, I had a lot of faith in Freddie. But that faith had to die. I had to go through it. And I know the word die and death, you know, might seem a little bit aggressive. But I feel that we can be afraid of that word. I know I tend to be, especially in this society, you know. But if we can reframe it, we can find that it's not really about the end of something. It can mean the beginning of something, something new. Seasons change. Change is the only constant that we have in this world. It's the only one thing that we really can put our faith in, because we live in this temporal plane. Acceptance of it is key, and it can be hard. You know, I don't mean to be glib or curt when I use these words die. It's more nuanced than that. It's more of a transmutation, a shedding of the skin, so to speak, because on one side, you have fear. And directly on the other side of that is love. And it can seem like this very thin veil, and it really is. But because of all our samskaras, all of our suffering, all of our fears, all of our traumas, we put up this obstacle, this block, this opaque thing that we can't get to it. And we try to circumnavigate around the fear to find love. We try to go around it tiptoe or just jump over it. But you can't. You know, that's the truth, the hard truth of this life, and that's the paradox. You have to feel it to heal it. You have to go through it to find the gold and the goodness on the other side. And sometimes there might be this conditioned part of ourselves that feels guilty for healing. Because how dare we? My loved one didn't get to. That person over there doesn't. What gives me the right to heal? Well, it's your God-given right. I'll tell you that right now. Because if you can't heal, how is the next person going to? How is the world going to heal? I was feeling pretty high and mighty last month. I was feeling very just good, in a really good place, spiritually, emotionally. Everything seemed to be just upward trajectory. I was watching a lot of Ancient Aliens, too. My wife loves the show, and I got a spoiler alert for you guys. It's always aliens, no matter what. And we were watching this one episode in particular, and it really, I liked it. It was talking about the Akashic Records. I don't know if you guys have heard of that, but I never really heard of that phrase before. And essentially, Akashic Records are an energetic field that where exists every feeling, every emotion, every thought that ever has existed and ever will exist. Now, in my judgment, it's just another word for the energetic field of creation and God, but they're referring to it as the Akashic Records. And I was very enamored with the idea of it. So I started doing meditations. I did some Google. You know, Google. Google really is the Akashic Record, right? It's got everything on it. And I went to Google, and they said you can do meditations where you can tap into and find answers for things that you're seeking. So I did this meditation once, and I was in a really good spot. I felt like I was transcending. I was very deep, and I was losing my traditional yammering of my mind. And I asked Akash, I said, hey, show me what I really need to do to fully heal. I don't want this topical solution. I don't want to spray the Roundup. I want this to be ripped up from the root. I've suffered from a lot of health anxiety, PTSD, just regarding loss and death in my life. And while I have great stretches, there's always like this low hum in the background. Of like, yeah, you remember that? It's still there. Just never fully goes away. And so I was adamant. I was like, show me how to heal. And this number just starts flashing through my mind, like the main frame of my mind. I think it was 295-830. 295-830, just, I'm like, what is this? I don't have any affiliation with this number whatsoever. So I got out of the meditation, I wrote it down because I knew I'd forget. Sat there for a minute, and I was like, what is this? I have to know. So I went back to Google. And it's a postal code in Egypt. And upon further discovery, or upon further study and research, there have been archaeological digs in next to that postal code that have revealed a lot of Christian artifacts underneath a lot of these tombs of the pharaohs and pyramids. I was like, wow, that's interesting. Because this is about the same time I started my new SEE class with Unity Worldwide, and it's Jesus' teachings. And one of my texts is Your Hope of Glory by Elizabeth Sand Turner. And in her first reading assignment, this paragraph jumped out at me. It's something I think from Luke. The wise men were, it could be Matthew, don't crucify me for that. The wise men were warned in a dream, it's about Jesus' birth. The wise men were warned in a dream not to return to Jerusalem. So they departed to their own country by another way. Herod, failing to receive a report from the wise men, became exceedingly fearful. In an effort to secure his throne, he issued an edict that all male children under 2 years of age living in Bethlehem or their surrounding country should be put to death. Herod, however, did not accomplish his purpose, for Joseph was warned in a dream to flee to Egypt with Mary and Jesus. And she goes on to say, from a metaphysical standpoint, Egypt typifies the sense place of thought that temporarily harbors the Christ consciousness. And I was like, wow, that's pretty trippy. I just had this meditation about Egypt, and I'm starting to dive into my teachings of Jesus, and I'm starting to cultivate and facilitate my own greater awareness of the Christ and the consciousness. And I was like, wow, that's insane. And as I've started this class, I'll be honest, I've been ripped wide open. I've been stripped to the bone, and it's been painful, it's been exhilarating, I've been all over the place. But my original thought was, well, it'd be good for me to take this class. I need to enrich my understanding of the Bible and maybe foster a better relationship with Jesus because I don't really have one. And I thought it'd be a nice addition to the tool belt. But to be honest to God, I've avoided the Bible like the plague. Yeah, I'll bust out some scripture here and there for my talks to drive home a point, or, you know, definitely during Christmas or Easter in the talks I've done in the past. But I've been scared. I've been terrified to dive into it on my own because of all the religious trauma I associated with it. You know, all the trauma I've got relating to my father. And Ram Dass says, if you're busy pushing something away, it's still got you. Because you're so busy not doing it, you're not doing anything else. And like some of you, I'm sure I was raised with this belief that God is out there. It's not inside, and it's always a he. It's always a he, right? And it's looking down, he's looking down on you, and he's judging you, and he's gonna be punitive if you mess up. And a lot of that belief bled into Jesus. And so unlike the song, Jesus wasn't all right with me. I was not cool. Jesus was not my homeboy. And it's sad because I'm missing out on this great wisdom and teaching. It's sad because, I mean, Unity is based on the Christ-conscious principles. And what we know here and what we teach here and what we believe here is different than a lot of what the world teaches us, what our parents taught us, what society teaches us. And I couple all this with the judgments that my father didn't really believe in what he told me anyway. And as he lay dying, he clung to this life so hard. All I could see was just the fear that was in him to go over to the other side. And that did a number on me. It's hard because as a young man, a young boy, I see this guy espousing all this stuff. And when his time comes, he doesn't really believe it. Not only am I traumatized about death, I'm traumatized in life. And so I realized I'm traumatized by God. And how sad is that? How sad is that if we have trauma around the creation, the effect of life, the goodness that is there? And I'm going to go back to my favorite quote from Reverend Paul Hasselbeck in his great book, Heart-Centered Metaphysics. What we think about God is going to make the difference between a haunting fear that weighs us down and keeps us back, or an exhilarating strength and inspiration that stimulates us to our highest achievement. And that's it at the root. What do we believe? Because it's everything. I don't care. Even atheists will espouse stuff. Oh, there's no God. No. We worry. We want to know where we came from and where we're going. It's human. And that's okay. It's how do we adjust this error-based and erroneous thinking of fear? How do we really get to a space where we really believe that there's one presence, one power active in our lives? God, the good, omnipotent. And I'm sitting here, and I'm diving into these teachings, and I'm pissed off at Akash, because I asked you, I was like, hey, I want to heal. Are you going to show me how to heal? This isn't healing. I'm suffering here. I'm in pain. I'm in anxiety. I'm opening this. I can't open the Bible without having a heart palpitation and just freaking out. And I sat there, and I was like, okay. Oh. I ask you to heal. You heard me. You're showing me where I need to go to find healing. It's going through that fire and making assessments and understandings and judgments and beliefs, making my own beliefs. Let me integrate them into my mind. Let me know what I think about it. Let me not push it away just because of what someone said that was close to me. We all have complex relationships. A lot of us do with our parents, and it dictates our future. How do we find the eternal by transforming and transmuting the pain of the physical? We all go through it. And Unity calls this chemicalization. Chemicalization. It's when these old beliefs we have that are stored up in us, they're so powerful. They've got such a grip on us, but then they're met with these new beliefs. And these new beliefs can be our salvation. But they get muddled up and mixed with these old beliefs that just cling and they want to hold on to them. And oftentimes we choose pain over joy because it's familiar. We're scared if we get to this amazing place, it's just going to be ripped away from us again. It's not true. It's not true. I don't have health anxiety. I had God anxiety because I've never had my own relationship with it. I've never fully taken the time to do that. And I had a lot of judgments about the old book. You know, they say him a lot. It's all very masculine. But things weren't perfect back then. It was over 2,000 years ago. I mean, things aren't perfect now either. But let's find some grace. Let's find some grace for ourselves, for the teachings, for our brothers and sisters, for the people around us. Just a few weeks ago, we had most amazing, lovely talk, gut-wrenching talk by our own Carolyn Harper, talking about Ho'oponopono and forgiveness. There is no healing without forgiveness. And that was one of the main teachings that Jesus taught us. There's nothing wrong with that. Just my 8-year-old self that hated going to CCD class, hated how musty the old Catholic church smelled, hated having to go to Saturday afternoon mass because I had to quit playing with my friends because my parents were too lazy to wake up on Sunday. So we went to the Saturday mass. It's just all these human things that are keeping us down spiritually. And I realize I'm doing it all wrong. God's not human. We are. God is the cause, the divine ultimate cause, and we are the effect. And we have free will. Humans are our relative truth. God is the absolute truth. It's never changing. We are. It's like the idea there are these divine ideas, these absolute truths. Like beauty is one of them. Beauty exists. And it comes in many different forms. A rose, a flower is beautiful. But through the seasons, the petals fall off and it withers and dies. That is just the hard fact of living on this temporal plane. But it doesn't diminish the greatness of spirit that is all around and inexhaustible and that is in us. Our physical bodies may change, but God, the goodness, the divine, always stays the same. And this isn't your mother's God or your father's God. You have to realize that God is your mother and your father. Jesus even said it. He said, "I have not come to bring peace. I've come to bring a sword that will swath through your mother, your father, your family, where you come from." And he's not saying, "Oh, let's go murder your family." He's saying that this is yours to behold and yours alone. It's nobody else's. To lay claim to all the beauty that is in your life, you have to accept it. You have to accept who you are and live up to your highest potential and your highest greatness. And anything that doesn't serve you, anything that's painful, you've got to let it die off. Only then are you able to be reborn again and experience the love and the light. Charles Fillmore, an Atom Smashing Power of Mind, says, "I have found that the kingdom of God is within man, and that we are wasting our time in defeating the work of spirit if we look for it anywhere else." In New Testament interpretation, we find the kingdom of heaven is relative. It is not an absolute, but rather an evolving something. When the parables of Jesus are studied carefully, an unmistakable pattern emerges which reveals the definition of the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven, it's not a place. It refers to the process of growing, unfolding, expansion of consciousness of God and truth within an individual. And that's all I'm saying. One of these parables I read, part of my homework was Matthew 25:14. There's a lot of wisdom in these old texts and scriptures. I mean, who knew? Look and you shall receive. And it's about the parable of talents. And the crux of it is there's this landowner, this businessman, master, you know, times weren't great back then. And he's leaving on a trip and he calls his three servants up to him. He says, "Hey, I'm going to give you 5 talents. To be clear, talents back then represented a monetary sum. I think it's 15 years of a worker's wage, so it was a pretty large sum of money. So the first one he gave 5 talents, the second one he gave 3 talents, and the third one, 1. And he left, and after he leaves, the first servant goes into town, makes a bunch of deals, and he grows the money. He grows the 5 talents to 10 talents. The second servant follows suit and does the same, grows from 3 to 6. The third servant was so fearful of his master, fearful of being judged, of losing it, anything bad happening, he went out into the back and he buried the talent in the ground. When the businessman comes home, he calls upon his servants, "What have you done?" The first one comes out and shares that he has doubled his money, to which he rejoiced and said, "You are such a beautiful, wonderful servant. You will inherit much more of your master's works. Please come into my favor." Says the same thing to the second one. The third one comes up and tells him what he did. He became incensed. "You worthless, scared, lowly servant, how dare you bury this talent? You're admonished to the darkness where there will be much suffering and gnashing of teeth." And the way I take that is, it's a double entendre, talents and money, but we all have goodness. We all have things to give. And if we shrink and shirk our responsibilities out of fear, there will be nothing but suffering. It's our job to go forth into the world and bring our light, the goodness that's in us, everywhere we go. It's not something we ever get reprieve from. In the morning, with your family, at work, at night, share your light. Go out there. And to whom much has been given, much more will be given. And with whom there is nothing, nothing will be given. I was doing my introductory homework a few weeks back, and I was just typing out my history, kind of getting to know you. And I just had this feeling, you know, what I was getting myself into was going to be rough, but I said, I think doing this will help heal my relationship not only with Jesus, but with my own father, who's been deceased for a while now. And as I was typing these words out, I was in my office. I've got this little bar set up to my right, and I've got like some wine glasses and cocktail glasses on the glass shelves. I heard this vibration, this ringing. Look over. The glasses are just shaking. Kid you not. And I stop what I'm doing, and this rush of just like, oh my goodness, supernaturalness, and just this, my body went cold and had the shivers, those good shivers though. I was like, oh my God, okay, I hear you. And it stopped. And then, of course, I got up. I went and looked around. I was like, what? Like, I went around the wall. Was there anything that could be causing this vibration? Was the AC on? Like, what? Nothing. So my point I'm trying to make that I hope you go on and carry on with you is that stop looking. Don't go around the wall. Don't look for the burning bush. Know that whatever goodness is going to happen to you or will happen to you is there for a reason. Let it in. To whom people who have more, more will be given. Open yourselves up. Let it come in. Let the beauty of life rush through you. A good friend, Nick Giovacchini, I can't see him, lights on me. He told me once that the path of God has many mysteries, but no mistakes. True words have not been spoken. Go forth on your path with a sense of awe, wonder, and love, and fully, fully live. That is my wish for you. Have a blessed day. Let's take these thoughts into meditation. If you will, close your eyes. Just get centered in your seat and feel the weight of your body being supported by your chair. Feel your back being supported by the back of the chair. And if you feel comfortable, I encourage you to put one hand on your heart and breathe into it. Breathe into that. Feel the goodness of your breath. Feel the life and the expansiveness that come with just such a simple action that we do multiple times a day. Breathe in there. Feel the goodness. Think of a time, maybe not the best time, maybe a time when you were scared. When things didn't feel fair or right. And just sit with that. And notice how it makes you feel. And take another breath and breathe some divine love into it. And realize that you're not in that spot anymore. You are here now. Anything that has ever been hard, you've been able to walk with and deal with and walk through. See if there's that little child inside of you that is saying anything, if it needs anything. Don't be scared of it. Send it some love. Send it some compassion. And know that it too is an expression of God. Feel that warmth of what it feels like to be held and to hold. And start knowing that this space and this place is inexhaustible. And you can come back to it anytime, anywhere. and know that you have the strength and the power and the gift to walk through anything with that little child. And I encourage you to integrate that with your thoughts and your mind and just focus on what is good. No doubt there will be trials, but there's nothing that you, beloved, cannot overcome. You are never alone. There is no separation. You are one. Take one more breath and know that this wholeness is your divine birthright. And go forth the rest of the day and the rest of your time with a deep sense of peace and love. And so it is.